Welcome to the Lister Health Talks podcast. Each month, listen in as the team focuses their discussion on relevant, relatable health content that empowers your health and the readiness of the force. In today's show, our behavioral health team is taking over the show with special guest Lieutenant Colonel Adam Keller holding the reins as our host. We often focus on physical health, eating well, exercising, getting enough sleep, and those are so important. But truly thriving means paying attention to our mental and emotional well-being too. So today is a great day to check in with ourselves. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Lister Health Talks. Today's episode is about how focusing on self-care can lead to a huge boost in your mental well-being. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Adam Keller, Chief of Behavior Health and Installation Director of Psychological Health with Lister Army Health Clinic, your host for this special episode, and I'm glad you're here. Life can feel overwhelming, right? Big goals, big problems, big to-do lists that just stare back at you. But what if I told you the key to feeling less stressed, more in control, and generally happier isn't about conquering Everest, but about reaching attainable goals, like getting a good night's sleep? That's what we're exploring here on today's show. We're diving into achievable actions and how they can build momentum, reduce anxiety, and ultimately improve your mental health. Joining us today are special guests, Dr. Tony Franklin and Ms. Kelsey Miller from our primary care behavior health team. Why don't we go around the room and let them introduce themselves?
Yes, so glad you're with us today. I'm the behavioral health consultant here at primary care. I am a retired veteran. I was a military psychologist for many years, and an aeromedical psychologist as well. And I hung out in the joint special ops community. But now I'm fortunate to be in the latter stages of my career where I take care of the same people that I served with all those years. And that's aviators, aviator maintainers, their families. And this is kind of where I started my career. And it's so fun to be back here. We're going to have a good discussion, I believe.
Hello, all. My name is Kelsey Miller. I'm the behavioral health care facilitator for our clinic and an RN by trade. I am a Wiregrass native, and I am thrilled to have the opportunity to provide care to our service members and their families and to discuss mental health with you today.
I know you guys got a third member of the team of the primary care behavior health. That falls in with special care. That's Ms. Marcetta Chansey. She's the external behavior health consultant. So you got an internal, an external, and a care facilitator that keeps it all together. So Dr. Franklin does more of the therapy side of the house. Ms. Chansey does more of the medication, giving recommendations to the primary care providers on medications that can start in primary care. So I think you all got a trifecta of a team there, and we're really glad that we got you here at Lister Army Health Clinic. All right, so we got through our introductions, but what brings us all here together today is let's talk about Mental Health Awareness Month. Why do we observe Mental Health Awareness Month?
Well, I believe we do that to raise awareness. We want to try to reduce the stigma associated with mental health and promote support for individuals and families who are affected by mental illness. I also believe we discuss it to improve access to care, knowledge, to resources available, and to encourage open communication. And lastly, to celebrate those in recovery.
Like you said, you know, big part of that was reducing stigma. I mean, that's something that we've kind of have to been dealing with in mental health, but I think that's really improved over the last 20 years that I've been in the military. I've considered a big difference, a lot more resources out there, just that we're having a conversation today. I don't think we would have had this conversation 20 years ago when I joined the military. So,
I totally agree with you because yeah. I see that soldiers and families mm-hmm. are much more prone to access mental health when they need it for all kinds of things, not just depression, anxiety, but I mean, you know, for other things you wouldn't even think about, weight loss, smoking cessation, obviously stopping drinking. You know, sleep wellness. You know that you see that people think outside the box. If they feel a need, they go find a resource, and I think that's awesome.
May is just a month just to highlight our awareness for mental health and what matters. You know, we really it's every month is mental health awareness. Well, it kind of brings us to our next question. Like, what does mental health matter? Why is it important to us?
Well, I believe it's important because, you know, mental health is actually it's our emotion. It's our psychological makeup, our personality structure and our function. It's our social well-being. When you think about it, mental health is kind of how we meet the world. It affects everything in our life, is how we cope with stress our overall health, our relationships. It affects everything, our community, our work, and our overall look of ourselves and others.
Yeah. I mean, if we're not taking care of ourselves, how can we take care of others, right?
Exactly.
So I kind of start back at self-care, and that's what we kind of want to talk a little bit about today is, what are some things we can do to take care of ourselves?
Some of the ways to reduce stress that I suggest with my patients are exercising. Some people like to exercise in a gym, or you can go outside for a walk, exercise with friends, or you can do it independently if you would like just quiet time with you outside. Me, I am a reader. I would like to read a book and relax, get some fresh air, sit outside and read. If you want to involve your family, you could cook and do it as a group, and then you're providing nourishment to your whole family.
And those are some excellent ideas. And you know, it is an individualistic thing. What works for one person may not work for another. I mean, what works for me is I have passions. You know, I have things I like to do. I love fishing, pure fishing to be exact. I like going to the beach. I like being outdoors. I love my puppy dogs. When I come home, that is the thing that really absolutely puts me right back where I need to be, is when I open my door and I have four dogs that come to me and act like they haven't seen me for about a year. And they're always so excited. They're the loves of my life. That's what I do. But there's some things that I would add, not just to the individualistic things that people know that, you know, to reduce stress, but there are physical things that we cannot ignore. And I find that in my trade, I encounter it all the time. People that don't get proper sleep. They stay up too late, get up too early. They nap when they get home from work, and then they can't fall asleep till 1:30 at night. People that don't eat properly or eat the wrong things. People that don't hydrate. Those are just a few things that if you have out of sync are going to make it very difficult for you to get through even the most unstressful days. And the stressful days, there's no way you could sustain what you need to do if you don't take care of yourself. You know, sleep, eat, drink. It has to be important to you, and it has to be done right every day, every night, or else things are going to seem a lot harder than they should be.
I think when it comes to self-care, sometimes it's hard for people to take care of themselves. I mean, they're like they're workaholics, or they're taking care of others. And a lot of that is just making yourself accountable. And you might have to do that by setting goals, even if it's the smallest goal. It's like, on Friday night, I'm going to read a chapter of a book. I'm taking care of myself because that's what I like to do. So sometimes it is just making time for it, making time for yourself.
That's an excellent point. And here's what I hear all the time when I tell some people, like, well, you like going to the gym. You love swimming. You like going to the beach. You haven't done any of that lately. And when you raise that issue with them, they say, I don't have time. I just am too busy. Oh, and guess what? I mean, we call that a cop-out. You got to make time. Leisure is very underrated. It should be overrated because it's important to you. Leisure time makes work and other things tolerable. And without that, it becomes very difficult.
And I think one of the best things we can do to take care of ourselves is getting a good night's sleep.
Exactly.
So what are some tips we can do to get a good night's sleep? And what are some things that could happen if we don't get a good night's sleep?
Here's the thing that I would say. Very simple rules you can follow. Napping is an absolute detriment to proper sleep. Now, you may get sleep. It's not going to be quality sleep. So people that kind of get off work and say, boy, I'm going to get me a couple hours, 2-3 hours sleep before dinner, and then I'll get up and make dinner. They're replacing the demand for sleep. And when they try to go to bed at 10:30, they're not going to be falling asleep. They're going to be staying up later. So I would first say no napping. The other thing is to develop routines. So when you are ready to go to sleep, you're basically signaling your brain, your body, your whole the whole makeup of who you are is getting ready to go to sleep. And so those routines can be individualistic. But the idea is that you do the same thing every night, and that signals your body to get ready for sleep. So when you lay down in that bed, generally you'll fall asleep within 5 or 10 minutes. The next thing I would say is when you have those nights where you do fall, lay down and you're still tossing and turning after about 15 or 20 minutes, get out of bed, go do something. Your body is not ready to go to sleep. Your brain's not ready to turn off. Go do some things that you know, that you'd like to get done, getting ready for tomorrow, taking care of things, doing household chores. And when your body gets tired, it'll signal you. You'll start kind of drifting off. If you're sitting there watching TV, you'll notice that you're tired, and that's the time to go lay down. A lot of things are environmental with sleep. You know, a very comfortable bed. Cooler temperatures promote sleep. Warmer temperatures keep you awake or make you wake up during the night. And then configuring your room is another thing. A darker room's better for sleep. You might have a small nightlight, but the idea is you want something to be dark. You want it to be quiet. Those are some things can help you develop better sleep patterns. And the last thing I'll say is it should be the same. You know, one thing that people do is they sleep different for work. They sleep different for the weekends. Your sleep should be the same all 7 days. Now, I understand people out there saying, well, I work shift work, everything's different. Yes, that makes it much more difficult. And those are harder things to solve. But when you can, your sleep should be routine. It should be the same every single night. And you'll find that it promotes better sleep, more quality sleep.
So like the big points there, you know, big thing is routine, and you want cool, calm, and quiet in the room.
Exactly.
You got to set yourself up for success, right?
That's it.
All right. So I think those are two big takeaways there. Talking about how sleep can, not getting enough sleep can kind of lead to having mental health problems. I say the majority of my patients, when they initially come to me, have a problem with their sleep, in addition to whether you're dealing with depression or anxiety or some past trauma. Usually there's always a sleep component if they're not getting that quality sleep. So that's why it's like most important to kind of focus on the small things and then to kind of keep from them being like a stumbling block to having more problems.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing. You know, when people have issues, depression, anxiety, sleep is usually right there. Sleep deprivation is always a byproduct of that. Does one cause the other? I don't know. We could argue that, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg. But the idea is they are correlated, and it's something to think about. So if we improve, if we get a handle on anxiety, sleep improves. If I get a handle on sleep, my anxiety improves. Depression improves. It's the same thing. They kind of live in the same camp.
What are some signs that a patient may have that they might need to come talk to you, that there might be some things they could work on? Just some warning signs to say, hey, maybe I should find somebody to talk about it.
Well, a lot of what I see with my patients is they've had eating or sleep habit changes. They tend to withdraw from family or friends. They change hobbies or aren't putting any time into their hobbies. They have a decrease in energy level. They might have new pains and aches. Addictive habits will be more prevalent. They go through feelings of hopelessness, withdrawal, and numbness. They fluctuate mood swings, whether that be confusion, anger, being scared, having feelings of worry. They might hear voices. Some people have the inability to move past memories or thoughts that they have gone through or trauma.
And I would add to that, Kelsey, that one of the things I see is when they're just not relating to people how they normally used to, like they're shorter, they're quicker to anger, they're seeing impulsive things that they ordinarily would never do. They snap on their children, they snap on their husband, a husband snaps on a wife. I mean, so the idea is that they know, I think any force that's equalized will know when it's out of balance. And that's what I notice a lot of times is people are coming to me saying, I think something's not right. I don't know what it is, but it's not right.
And I think a lot of that we get from like our friends and family. They'll call us out.
Exactly.
Like, hey, you know, what's happened?
Yeah.
You know, I've not seen you react like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, oftentimes it'll happen at home first before it starts, you know, impacting you at work.
Yeah. And I tell you, you know, going back to my olden days when I was in the special ops community, deploying a lot. I mean, we're going, we're coming. We were exposed to a lot of things. Sometimes things did not end well. And when you come home with all that from deployments, you are, you don't notice it yourself. But when I would have my wife tell me point blank, you've got to do something about your anger, that makes you stop. That's me. I'm a psychologist. I should be all wrapped tight. I should be have it all together. But guess what? No, we're all human beings. And when somebody tells you, I have my own children saying, what are you doing, Dad? Why did you say that? Why would you do that? I mean, that makes you step back and go, well, why would I do that? And when you recognize it, then you have to face that, wow, I've met the enemy and he or I. So you got to go talk to somebody. And that's the perfect time to seek out help. At any level you can, find a resource and seek out help.
And we have, you know, some of our patients are service members. They'll wait to the last couple of years in the military to actually kind of start kind of coping with some things they've been bothered with. And, you know, we wish that we could see those patients earlier so they could have a more fulfilling life. But we want to also make sure that they're ready for that next step to transition out of the Army. So I think that kind of breaking down the barriers of the stigma, get people in earlier so we can kind of help you out, enjoy your life. I think that's one of the things that we see pretty common. It's difficult in the aviation community with behavioral health stigma and impact to flight status. So I think that's a problem that some folks, they fear. But I don't think that's nothing to really, I mean, at your all's level, just to have something to talk to. Is that going to impact them at all?
No, people that come see us, you know, we're generally trying to take care of smaller issues. And if anything is really a bigger mental health concern, of course, we're going to, you know, refer that to, you know, especially behavioral health, or we're going to refer that to maybe an outside provider so they can be seen, you know, more frequently for a longer period of time. Generally, what we do is we see people for a shorter period of time. They come about every couple of weeks. That might be a 30-minute visit. But the things we see, and it's not anything that's going to be a concern. If I see a flight risk, though, if it's a safety of flight issue, obviously I have to follow that up with the primary care manager. But I can tell you that I've been here now for a year and a half, and I just don't see that. We do things to make them better, help them sleep better, help them eat better, help them, you know, with relationship issues. And their quality of life improves, and they fly on. I mean, that's what we want to accomplish.
What I think you're saying is that the key there is early intervention.
Exactly.
Fixing the small problems before they come big. And
exactly.
Early intervention is key.
Yeah, aviators are big on mechanics because that's what keeps those things flying. But think about this. You're driving down the road, you're listening to your radio, and you hear this squeal every time you hit your brakes. The smart person will go right to their mechanic and say, I think I got a brake issue because you're down to where that warning is, and it's going off. If you take care of that brake issue right there, probably going to cost you $125. If you ignore it, it's probably going to be closer to $500 or $600. And you know, metaphorically, that's kind of the way I look at it. Earlier, obviously, the better. It's going to be a better outcome for everybody concerned.
All right. Well, I'm just going to kind of bring it all together here. You know, I've heard a lot of good tips, a lot of good things to kind of look at to kind of improve our lives. You ever remember a couple of years ago when they were doing the performance triad? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I think it was about, I don't know, around 2013, 2014. That was the Surgeon General's campaign that she was going on. But it really makes a big difference. I mean, the performance triad was sleep, nutrition, and activity.
Exactly.
You know, that's a tripod kind of holding us all together. And one of those legs of that tripod fall, and you're going to come tumbling down. So it's a good defining balance. Balance in everything you do. Balance in making sure you're a good, healthy diet. Balance with your sleep. But so the things that, some resources out there that can help us to find balance if we're off kilter. Primary care behavioral health, where you all work, that's one resource. But there's a plethora of resources that are available to us. We got the Armed Forces Wellness Center. We got military family life counselors all across post. Our chaplain, our unit ministry teams and chaplains. I mean, they do make a big impact on post. And if people are apprehensive about seeking care on post, we have Military OneSource. There's other resources off post. Bottom line is, you know, we just, wherever you're seeking resources, we just want you to find a resource to kind of help you be a better version of yourself. And don't be afraid to help others. You know, if you see something, say something to others. If you see somebody have a bad day, something's off, you know, help them out. You say, take care of ourselves and we want to take care of others. One of the questions some of our listeners might have is referrals. So do we need referrals to see Dr. Franklin?
No, in order to get an appointment with Dr. Franklin, it does not require a referral. You can either self-refer yourself on the portal, or you could call into the clinic and we could get you set up to have an appointment with him. And if you were looking to be staffed with me, I also do not require a referral. Normally the primary care managers will just reach out to me.
And that's the same with most of our resources. They don't have to have somebody else helping them make that appointment. They can do it themselves. We can also take referrals from our providers to kind of do that warm handoff. We do it with our primary care providers, but anybody can come into the behavioral health clinic, and we use a targeted care model to kind of make sure that they're getting the appropriate resource at the appropriate time. So you don't want to elevate a problem that can be handled at the lowest level. You know, that we don't want to bring more anxiety to folks. We want to make sure that they're getting the right place at the right time.
And something I'd love to add, I want the community to realize when you're looking at the behavioral health consultant, who can he see? I see everybody. If you come in primary care, I can see you. I see 2-year-olds. I see infinity and beyond in age. I see, of course, soldiers. I see spouses. Children, adolescents. That's the kind of a thing I get a lot is, hey, do you see this and this and thus and so? And hey, if they come in primary care, if you were eligible to be seen in primary care, you can get on my calendar. I have access. We keep my calendar the way it is because we want me to be accessible. There are times where you might be trying to get in on an outside referral, and it takes a while to do that. Think of us, the behavioral health consultant team, think of us in terms of a bridge to care. You might not stay with us, but you could start with us, or we could help carry you until you can get in on that outside referral. If you do need help, we're here for that.
And even in specialty care behavioral health, we do offer, in the behavioral health clinic, we have a couple other resources. We have substance use disorder clinical care, so any problems with addiction, and also a psychiatry services. Both of those services are open to our other beneficiaries, retirees, not just service members. So we have the first of right refusal. If we have the ability to put on other beneficiaries other than service members in those two categories, we will do it. So it's just good to have another resource because in the network, there can be a wait to get access to care. So we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make sure that our patients have the quickest access to care.
I do have something else I want to share with you today, and it's in the way of a gift to you. And it's something that I stumbled upon. I had an old college professor, and he used to say something when we were in group and somebody would bring up something that was earth-shattering and we're wanting some feedback on it. And he would tell them this. This is what he would say. He said, I just want to tell you that this too shall pass. Now, everybody's heard that. We've all heard that phrase. But it was the second part of what he said that always stuck with me. And this is what he would tell them. This too shall pass. So decide right now how much time you want to spend on it. That really, when you think about it, there's some very important words in there. Time and spend. Now, we know spend is money. We spend money. We also spend time. We can get more money. We'll never get more time. Think about all the things that become a crisis in your life, or something that you overthink, or something that really upsets you, and decide how valuable the time is that you might waste on that, because you can't get it back. And we do really, as I said earlier when I was talking about sleep, we're kind of our own worst enemy. And sometimes we are, with mental health, our own worst enemy. it's going to pass. And think about it this way. In 5 years, that moment that you spent so much time on and wasted and severed relationships and whatever might have happened, hurt maybe a child's feelings, embarrassed your wife, alienated your husband, whatever happened in 5 years, you won't remember that moment. In 1 year, you probably won't remember it. So think about that. Think about how you spend your time, what your internal dialogue does to you. Because I tell people all the time, I say, well, you talked yourself into it. So now you know that you have the strength and the courage to talk yourself out of it. It's just something to think about.
Thank you so much, Dr. Franklin and Ms. Miller, for y'all being here today. It's been a pleasure. It's been a great topic. It's been a needed discussion, and looking forward to speaking with you all in the future.
Oh, it was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's all for this episode of Lister Health Talks. Thank you for listening, and remember, be kind to yourself, focus on self-care, and celebrate every step forward. Thanks for listening.
The Lister Health Talks podcast is produced by the Lister Omi Health Clinic Public Affairs Office at Fort Novosel. You can catch all of our episodes on your favorite streaming platforms. Stay healthy, Fort Novosel.